Welcome to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you need dynamite to take them off. Now, here's your host, John Johnston, on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Coasting with me this evening is the Ballistic Radio minion, Matt. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, John. How about you?
No, not too bad. So this will actually be one of the first shows where we actually get a minute, and I might force Matt to say some things just because he usually sits in the corner and looks scared. Are you happy to be here, Matt?
I am.
Oh, okay.
I'm not in the corner this time either.
Yeah, that's because Andy's not here. And once again, we are pre-recording the show because, oh, I don't know. It's almost easier in a way. Anyway, we're going to have a really, really cool guest on this evening, Ben Steger, one of the he's a robot. I don't know what to say. He's one of the best shooters in the world. So I'm going to talk to him about how he has made the progression from not awesome to awesome, and I think that should be interesting for everybody. Just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Colt. Colt, the legend continues. Quick update, the Knights Armament Test Gun, the SR-15 Mod 2, should be to me today or tomorrow, so it's Wednesday today. Also have the Freedom Munitions 20,000 rounds of 5.56 is on the way as well. Very thankful to them for donating that ammunition for the test. Should be really cool. And as we get going, I will post details of the rifle, detail the ammo, and details of what we're doing. But other than that, I'm trying to think if there's anything else going on that you guys would care about. Was not able to make it down to Memphis at the Rangemaster Advanced Instructor Course because of stupid things that came up. I'm very sad to have missed it, but I heard it was a great class. Apologies to Chuck for coming in second, but AJ, good job. I wish I'd been there to lose to everybody, but maybe next year, so we'll see what happens. Anyway, let's get Ben on the line, and we'll go from there. So joining us this evening, Mr. Ben Steger. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well.
So thanks for coming on the show today. I do appreciate it, and certainly kind of looking forward to getting a chance to sit down and talk to you and sort of see how you do what you do. But I guess for people that are not aware, and that should be very few people at this point, but let's assume that they've been living under a rock. Do you mind telling a little bit about your background and what you do now?
Sure. I shoot your USPSA competition or practical shooting handgun competitions. I've been doing that now about 10 years, so it's been quite a while. Mm-hmm. Travel all over the country. I do, shot a little bit internationally, but most of the time I compete in the U.S., kind of as a part of, I've gotten pretty good in the sport. I've started, I do coaching and, I have a training system and I do a really little podcast. So I kind of put out like training instructional type of information as well.
Right.
In addition to doing some coaching.
And where can people find your podcast at if they're interested in listening to a program that's actually good as opposed to mine? Which is questionably good.
You can find it on iTunes or go over to bensteger.com and find it. It's really niche. It's not like a mass audience type of podcast. It's really tightly focused on people who are serious about competing with handguns and practical shooting sports. But if you're serious about that, you practice a lot, you might get something out of it.
Yeah, and I've kind of told everyone this, and I guess I'm semi unusual with the. I guess I fall into the tactical side of things, but I really think competitive shooting is one of the best ways there is to improve your skills under pressure, which I don't know why more people don't share that opinion. It seems to be becoming a more popular opinion. But so I guess the first thing, and you mentioned that you have a shooting program, and you mentioned, too, that you've gotten kind of good at it. Now, you're being humble there. You've won quite a few competitions, haven't you?
Within production division, practical shooting has a bunch of divisions. There's like race gun stuff. I compete in production, so that would be stuff like Glocks, SIGs, Berettas. I shoot a Tenfolio Stock II, mm-hmm. which is totally a gun designed to be the most competitive possible gun that fits within the rules for production division.
Right.
But be that as it may, I shoot in production division, and I do pretty well in the U.S. So it's pretty unusual that I'll shoot a domestic match and not win.
Right.
I mean, so competing internationally, it's different, obviously.
Right.
I do well within the country, and I've been doing a little bit better every year, I feel like. So I haven't peaked out yet.
It's hard to imagine what your peak level would be, because you do some things with a handgun that is just trying to imagine even coming close to that is difficult for me, because I'm really not that good. But
I've actually seen video of you. I was surprised. I saw some video of you the other day shooting a fast drill
in
under 5 seconds, and that looked pretty legit to me.
Oh.
I think you've got some skill.
God. Yeah, I guess maybe compared to some folks, but there's all sorts of, I mean, between I get to, you know, talk with guys like you and hang out with guys like Vogel and stuff like that. So it's really easy to say, well, you know, not the best, but I try. I'm working at it, which I really think is the important part that people need to be doing, is just, you know, figuring out what your baseline is and just going from there. Enough about me. So as far as you mentioned that you have a shooting program. And I'd like to hear more about that and kind of talk with you about your thoughts as far as, you know, how do you determine where you're at, and how do you improve from there?
Okay. Well, as far as a shooting program, I mean, you could more call it a training system.
Yeah, sorry.
So, yeah, I mean, whatever you want to call it, that's fine. So for me, I have kind of like three pillars of it. One is technique. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of like, how do you draw the gun? How do you hold the gun? All of that sort of stuff. And then the other side of it is doing dry fire training, which, I mean, I think is a really good idea. I think people should do that pretty much every day.
Yeah.
If you're serious about, you know, improving their skills, competitive shooting, or I mean, whatever you want to do, I think dry fire training is really important. And then there's the live fire training component. So that's kind of how I break it out.
Yeah.
And then within that, I have all sorts of different stuff that you can do, like normal, like stand and shoot drills where kind of they're repeatable. We know, you know, we're going to set up the same way every time, run it the same way every time. You can kind of track your progress over time, and everything from like more kind of in practical shooting competition, we never know what it's going to be,
right?
What the stages will look like. So to prepare for that, you set up practice setting up a lot of different things and just working through it the best you can and applying the skills you have that day the best you can and seeing what you can learn from it.
Right.
So it's like it's all that sort of stuff.
Okay. We've got about a minute left, and then we have to go to break. And I guess my first question would be, for the people that are listening to the show right now and maybe think that they're serious about training, what is the first thing to concentrate on there? What's just one quick blurb that maybe they should be thinking about that maybe they're not?
Well, they should go, if they're serious about training, you should go, for me, I'd say go shoot a match.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't compete already, just go shoot a match and kind of see what it is that you're going to be trying to do.
Right.
You know, I mean, a lot of people are on the fence about like, hey, I'm not good enough to do that right now, or I can't, you know, now's not the right time, whatever. And really, people get the most out of it if they just go and do it once.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, they understand immediately, like, okay, so this is what kind of a match looks like, this is how it's scored, and they understand so much more really quickly if they just go try it once.
Right. And that's actually something I'm kind of excited. I'm going to be trying to do that, just because the reason I've not had much time to compete in the past, but the other thing too is that, you know, I appendix carry, and there are not very many disciplines where it is legal to do that, and USPSA is one of the ones. If I compete in limited division, I'm thinking I'll be able to do that. But we'll talk about that a little bit more. I got a couple other questions, and I might bring up the duty project and what that is, and why so many people like it or don't like it at some point. But anyway, we're talking with Ben Steger right now. You're listening to Ballistic Radio.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. Just a reminder, too, this segment brought to you by Wather, Wather and the new PPX. Anyway, right now we are talking with Mr. Ben Steger, USPSA competitor and awesome, amazing robot-level shooter. Ben, are you still there?
I am.
Perfect. Not hung up on you, which is good, because I've actually not hung up on a guest in a while, have I, Matt?
No, you keep talking about it every time. And
I think that's more of a reminder to myself to not do it, because I've done it a couple times. You'll find the irony here. The last guy I hung up on a lot was actually Todd Green, so Todd's a friend of mine.
That is weird.
Yeah, karma, I guess. Anyway, we won't go there. See, the people listening to the broadcast are kind of wincing right now if they know why that's funny that I would bring him up, but it's just a little nod. I'm sorry. Anyway, so we were talking before the break as far as people should maybe shoot a match. And shoot a match no matter what skill level they're at, just sort of to get a baseline where they're at, or?
Well, it's more just to understand what you'd be trying to achieve. So if you're going to get serious about competitive shooting, you just go there and you see, like, hey, this is kind of what it is. Because you can read about it and you can watch videos, but you don't ever really get a flavor for it until you go and you try it. I mean, it's different. I mean, feeling – like, for me, I'll still go to a match sometimes and I'll be under so much stress. I mean, it's all self-induced, of course, but
yeah. You're
under so much pressure that my hands are shaking.
Right.
You know, and, like, until you go and you feel that feeling – because, I mean, you can tell yourself, like, oh, I don't care how I do, and I'm just going to go have fun, or whatever. I mean, eventually, you show up at a match, and there's a bunch of people watching you, and you're like, oh, man, I don't want to be the dude who's terrible. Like,
right.
I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
I want to, look cool and go fast and impress girls and all that stuff.
Well, see.
And then when you experience that feeling.
Yeah.
I mean, it's different.
See, and I've said this in shows in the past, but I really think if I ever have an advantage over anybody, it's the fact that I've acknowledged long, long ago that I'm never going to look cool or impress anybody, so I don't try anymore. It seems to work out pretty okay for me. Even my employees make fun of me on a pretty regular basis, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, sort of. In some sort of way, yes.
Yeah, I deserve it, so. So let's say someone's made the decision to shoot and they've picked a shooting sport, and obviously you compete in one, but would you say that going out and competing in anything is better than not?
Yeah, well, if you want to shoot, sort of a normal type of handgun,
mm-hmm.
It'd be a full-size handgun. So there's not really a sport out there that's for true concealed carry pistols.
Right.
But if you want to shoot a full-size handgun, you're going to be shooting IDPA or USPSA.
Right.
It's going to be one of those two. And there's just, it's kind of whatever regionally is close to you or whatever. I mean, where I live, there's not a whole lot of IDPA going on. So it's not even a real option.
Right.
You
brought something interesting there. And this seems to be a conversation that happens a lot as far as, and especially between the Timmy side of the house and the gamer side of the house is, well, gamer guns and blah, blah, blah. As far as concealed carry guns go, there are a lot of people that don't think you can carry a full-size gun. I've never really agreed with that, but, in fairness, too, I'm like 6'2 and 250 pounds, so hiding a gun's not that hard anyway. But I guess what I'd like to get your opinion on is there too much of a focus in the industry as a whole on the gear between the gamer side and the tactical side, and not enough of a focus on just what kind of shooter you are?
Well, yeah, you could certainly say that. I mean, so the normal, if you have this conversation with gamers, they're going to look at that and they're going to say, oh, these FUDs who are, criticizing the gear we use, those guys are terrible no matter what. So I can hand that guy a full-size gun or whatever, and he's going to suck with it.
Yeah.
All right, and then I think the tactical crowd would, pretty accurately point out that there's a lot of people within competitive shooting that are awful if they shoot real guns.
Yeah,
I mean, like an unmodified Glock.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of pretty good competitive shooters can't use that gun. So I mean, yeah, of course, people love to talk about gear. I don't really think gear is what it's about.
Yeah.
I think if you improve your skill level, even with, you know, gear that you wouldn't consider realistic, and, you know, yeah, that's your own decision, whatever you think you can carry, whatever you want to carry, whatever.
Right.
That's, you know, that's your deal. But if you improve your skill level with any type of gear, that's going to, you're going to learn from that, and that's going to, you know, help you with, you know, whatever you're carrying. So it's kind of, to me, it's kind of a moot point. It kind of doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Because if you're out there with whatever, shooting a gun, if you shoot a gun that you yourself would not carry and you get a lot better with it, I think you're going to learn from that.
Right. Well, I know that.
You've got to remember to keep practicing with your carry gear.
Well, yeah, that helps. And I mean, that's one of the things that I've been looking for, and probably one of the reasons why I'll move over to competing in the limited division if I ever actually start competing, which I'd really like to do, is just the fact that I can run the setup that I run every day. And I'm not going to win anything at all for multiple reasons, but at least I'll get to practice with what I use. The go ahead.
Well, I mean, you might be surprised. Do you know Gabe White?
I'm not nearly as good as Gabe, I have to say, so...
So there are people out there who are shooting, you know, appendix carry or junk carry, whatever you want to call it. Those
right.
guys are out there competing. And talking with Dave, what I really like about his attitude is he's going out there. He doesn't really right off the bat say, you know, I'm not going to win.
Yeah.
He looks at it and says, well, I have a disadvantage, but, you know, in truth, you probably could win. And, you know, he's gotten so much better just by bringing that attitude.
Oh, yeah.
Personally, I'm going to go out there and try, and I'm actually going to compete. I'm not just going to show up and be like, well, I'm not going to win.
Well, that,
I think one of these days he's going to start.
Yeah, and that's an interesting attitude, too. And also, too, congratulations to Gabe. And I know I mentioned it before, but he was down at the Bill Rogers Shooting School, and I want to say aced the Rogers Shooting Test from concealment. First guy that's ever done it, if I remember correctly. So congrats to him. It brings up an interesting point, though. And you talk about being competitive and maybe the mindset behind that. Do you think that the competition that people are trying to have against other people would be better suited about having it with themselves, if that makes sense? I mean, should you be concerned about beating other people, or should you just be concerned about beating what your personal best is, and then if that beats other people, well, there you go.
I think that depends on kind of where somebody's at. And there's a lot of different right answers to that question depending on somebody's own mentality.
I'm looking for the Ben Stegger mentality here.
Like for me, I always want to do my best.
Yeah.
But it's good for me to get a little bit of like I want to go win.
Right.
I want to beat everybody. I mean, that's good for me to get some of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have the most fun in the sport that I have is out practicing by myself and learning and improving. That's why I have the most fun. But as far as competing, like, it is productive for me to bring this, I'm here to dominate attitude.
Right.
That's good for my performance.
Okay.
Now, it's not that way for everybody. You know, some people are so fixated on being competitive that they aren't really looking at what they're doing. You know, they're not really focused on improving.
Yeah. You bring something up there that you have the most fun when you're practicing on stuff by yourself, and this is kind of tangential to everything, but for a long time you've been sort of I'm thinking of a politic way to say this. We got about 2 minutes left before the next break. You've been sort of an industry outsider for as involved in the industry as you are, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Do you mind saying something about that in the minute and a half that we've got before the break? I mean, what brought that about, or what are your general thoughts on that, or maybe what are some things that people misconstrue about that?
On being an industry outsider?
Yeah.
Well, that's what's cool about competitive shooting is you don't really need sort of support from companies. You don't need to be sponsored up by anybody. You don't really need anyone's approval or say so. If you want to practice, you want to put in the time, you can go compete at a high level.
Right.
I mean, that's just the way it is. So, I mean, I'll be honest, there's plenty of people who are very respected in the industry who don't like me. They think I'm a prick.
Yeah, well.
But I'm in the fortunate position in a competition shooting sense. I can ignore that. It doesn't really matter to me.
Right.
I seem to be developing
sort of a reputation for annoying people as well. I know everyone at Open Carry Texas hates my guts right now, but that's a conversation for a different show. Well, I don't know. You can say we got about 30 seconds left. If you want to comment on that, you can real quick.
On
Open Carry Texas, probably not. Yeah, I won't put you
no,
there.
No, well, I mean, who cares? Like,
yeah,
I mean, you can say what you want. I mean, that's, and there's like the conversation going on right now about, you know, there's the guys who are like, hey, I have a right to do this, and other people are like, hey, let's have a productive strategy for getting other people to sort of accept this.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a good conversation.
Yeah.
And it's probably not awesome for different like pro gun people to be throwing each other under the bus on this.
Right.
You're just having a conversation about what is the best strategy, like how are we going to move forward, you know, that sort of stuff.
And that's actually something that I think, and myself included, lose sight of is trying to make it more of a conversation and less of a hate in, but and that
you guys are idiots.
Yeah, pretty much. And that'll lead into something really, really nice when we come back from the break. Right now we're talking with Ben Steger. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. Makers of firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium ARs. Whether you're looking to protect yourself or a first-time gun buyer or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for Sig parts and accessories. So, right now we are talking with Mr. Ben Steger about all sorts of things, and I got to throw in a little jab at Open Carry Texas, and I apologize. I love everyone equally and without bias. That's not true. Ben, are you still there?
I sure am.
All right, great. I'll try not to drag you down that road. I do want to ask you, though, if you want to talk about it, can you say what the Duty Project is and what that started as and what it is now real quick, and then we'll actually get back into shooting and how to shoot better. But I think I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about it when you were on the show.
Sure. Well, yeah, what the Duty Project is, I mean, it has a stupid name. It was a Facebook group where a friend of mine actually started a Facebook group called Duty Project because I was making fun of a sunglass company named Rudy Project, which sort of at the time heavily sponsored shooting sports.
Right.
So the reasons that started, I mean, I'm a child. I mean, obviously I was being childish and being silly. So I was making fun of these guys, and this Facebook group started, and then tons of personalities come on there and were trolling gun boards, were, you know, making inappropriate remarks about all sorts of things.
Great.
And it kind of turned into, now it's a forum. So if you go to dutyproject.com, it's a forum.
Yeah.
It's not a big forum. It's a really little forum. It's sort of all of the misfits and rejects from practical shooting competition. You know, that's where those guys go to hang out. So if they're too stupid to make their point on a different forum without getting ticked off, then that's where those guys go.
Okay.
They go over to Duty Project.
So, and it's funny, too, because You mentioned trolling other gun forums and places.
Oh yeah.
I know. I've actually been really surprised that you guys have not had anything too terribly negative to say about my show yet. I've been waiting for it, and it hasn't happened. I'm almost offended. Not much, but you know, maybe when I'm more relevant.
The problem is, you're too nice.
Is that what it is?
I mean, that's your issue.
Oh man.
Yeah. I don't think
you're
he
not
knows
opinionated
you do well
enough.
Now.
Well,
yeah, you gotta. I don't know. Like, there's not really a lot to hate on.
Oh man!
Unfortunately.
Well, I'll try harder.
I mean, they are harsh, but they're kind of fair too. So they're not gonna You're not going to troll on you too hard because you seem like a reasonable dude.
Well, I guess. I don't know about that.
If you start advocating people have a vest or something next to their bed or something just in case, start going down that road, like, they'll probably beat up on you a little bit.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, actually, because Greg Elifritz, who is a friend of mine, just wrote, I've been hanging out in Kentucky too much. Sorry, Kentucky. he just wrote an article about body armor based off of something that I had said to him. So maybe I'll get some hate off of my involvement with that. But I think that the thing that people miss out on is that, you know, I've got an opinion on what self-defense maybe should or should not be, and some steps that maybe people should or should not take. I can come up with any situation that will justify almost any stupid thing that I can think of, and it would be a valid argument whether or not it was unlikely. The thing is that I really don't care what other people do because I don't have to live with the consequences of their decisions. You know, and that's honestly the only reason I've even mentioned Open Carry Texas so much is because they're kind of making dirty in my swimming pool, and I don't like it. So, but anyway, that's all sorts of tangential to everything else. How about we get back into stuff that people actually care about, shooting better? So you were talking about going and competing and sort of operating under that pressure and seeing how that is. As far as, so someone's shot competitively a little bit and they just want to work on stuff, where would they go next? I mean, dry fire, obviously a big part of that, but what do you think?
Well, the trick is figuring out kind of where you are. It depends. If you just come into, let's say if you've never shot a handgun before and competitive shooting is your first, is kind of, that's your in to getting really involved with shooting handguns.
Mm-hmm.
That person has a very different path than, there's a lot of guys that spend some time in the military or were trained to shoot somewhere else, and then they go into competitive shooting. And you see that they're in a very different place. So a good example of that is I was observing a guy at a match a month ago who, to me, like, he kind of had military sort of shooting or tactical sort of shooting written all over him,
yeah,
just with his style. So he's very deliberate, very accurate, not super quick, and he seemed to let, like, a mistake carry through. So if there's a 20- or 30-second stage, he would make one little mistake that would turn into like a 10-second just demolishing his stage thing.
Right.
And then so my comment to that guy was, you're a much better shooter than you are a competitor.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to learn the game. And then there are other people who, you know, go to shoot competitively who just run through and they blaze and they're quick and, you know, they look cool, but they don't hit anything. So they never really got that sort of that fundamental base, like where they can fire an accurate shot with no time pressure. They never really learned how to do that,
even. Right.
And they just kind of go to matches and run around and squirt bullets and have fun. So it really depends on where you are. But I mean, as soon as you figure that out, then you can come up with a training plan that makes sense for you based on, you know, your prior experience. Because pretty much everybody's going to show up at a USPSA match having had a lot of other experience with handguns. No
right.
matter what that is, they're going to have had some.
So as far as, let's say someone wants to identify their weaknesses, and I mean, I guess stage results would be an easy way to do that. But let's say for whatever reason, they don't have a competition that's near them, or they've made enough excuses that they've believed that they're not going to go and compete right now, and they're still in the working on it by themselves phases. What would be some ways to determine where
sure.
they're at?
Well, USPSA has a classifier book, so one component of pretty much every club match is going to be a classifier stage. So that's, you know, a defined distance, defined targets, all that stuff. What you can do is just set up that classifier stage and play around with it a little bit and see what you can do on that classifier stage, whichever one you pick. It doesn't make a huge difference. And then you can look at those scores and compare those scores to people all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a really good sense of where you stand with that, or, you know, kind of competitively what you'd want to do. You might shoot what you feel like is really well and shoot really accurately, and you look and your score is like 30% nationally.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd say, oh, that's not real good.
Right.
You know, or, you know, maybe you'll do really well. It just kind of depends on Again, it kind of depends on where you are. So that's one way to do it. You can, anybody can go set up a classifier stage as long as your local ranger lets you do that. You get a really good sense of where you're at.
Okay. So let's say that you've done that and you've – we'll talk about speed and then we'll talk about accuracy, I guess. Well, actually, no, I lied. Let's talk about accuracy first. Let's say you shoot semi-quick. You're not that accurate. What are some ways to work on that?
Well, I mean, it's different for everybody, but kind of the common advice that that you hear from a lot of people is that you should go to, you know, 25 yards and shoot slow fire groups,
mm-hmm.
which I think is really bad advice
yep.
for people wanting to learn to be accurate in a USPSA context. But, I mean, the trick essentially is to not slow down and to figure out instead of just like go slow and get your hits, it's to figure out why you're missing at the speed that you're trying to go. It could be a lot of things. A lot of people try and sort of do recoil control with their trigger finger, so like they're squeezing their whole hand when they try to go fast.
Right.
And you know, see that'll produce some effect on the target. I mean, people get going really quick, they'll pull a gun off the target before they're even done shooting it,
mm-hmm.
or they'll be pulling the trigger before they get the gun onto the next target. They could, you know, do a quick reload and look really cool, but they end up missing their grip, for example. So there's a whole multitude of reasons why somebody could be fast and not accurate. And the trick, you know, the trick to solving that is to keep going fast and figure out your issue and work on it without really slowing down.
Okay, so being able to self-diagnose why, you know, oh man, I missed my grip on that reload, or you know, whatever.
And not just so much why I missed my grip, but a lot of people will be shooting fast and miss their grip and not even realize that they've done that.
Okay.
Or they'll be shooting. I mean, if you shoot a bunch of targets fast, it's really tough to figure out because there's, you know, they're going from a close target to a far target, or, you know, you have a big transition. You're swinging the gun really far to get to the next target. There's so many variables start getting introduced in there that it's really tough for people to self-diagnose.
Okay.
For that reason, like, the drills that I put in print for people, like, so I have a drill book that's skills and drills.
Mm-hmm.
The drills in there, the drills in classes are all like isolation drills where I just take one element and then work on that by itself. Because then when you start putting that stuff together into a big stage, you see a whole constellation of problems. And it's really tough for people who haven't been shooting that long. I mean, it's tough for people who've been shooting a long time to try and sort through that stuff and be like, you know, I'm hitting low over here, high over there, left over there. I mean, there's a lot of stuff happening, a lot of different elements, and it's tough to sort through it.
Yeah. I mean, and that was, you know, I still don't think of myself as that good compared to at least some of my peers. But the one thing that I started to feel good about a year or two ago, once I got more serious into this, was when I started recognizing the mistakes I was making and why I was making them. Now, we've got to go to break. When we get back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about that and see what projects you've got coming up, and you're teaching classes now too. I'd like to hear about that as well. So right now everyone's listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by the Polypalooza 2 Memorial Training Conference. Join some of the top trainers in the country August 16th and 17th at the Raven Concealment Systems facility in northern Ohio, where they will be teaching some of the most vital self-defense skills that every armed citizen should know. Lesson blocks will cover a myriad of topics suitable for shooters and students of all skill levels. Man, whoever wrote this is mean. I wrote this. For more information, click the Polypalooza 2 tab on ballisticradio.com. Registration is only $250, and all of the money is going to benefit the Paul Gomez Children's Trust. Remember, click the Polypalooza tab on the ballisticradio.com homepage for more information and save the date, August 16th and 17th. Myself and the Minions should be up there, too, so it should be a lot of fun. Oh, by the way, Matt, we're going up to Raven Concealment Systems facility at the end of August. So,
oh, okay.
Just let you know. Anyway, so, wow, I'm mean. Anyway, back with Ben Steger. We're talking with him about how to suck less, I guess would be a good way to say that. So I can say that on air, right, Eric? Yeah. Oh, good. Ben, are you still there?
Of course.
Perfect. Well, it's not an of course. I don't know why they let me run the phone lines at all. It's at times problematic. So anyway, we were talking about being able to self-diagnose, and you were talking about some of the isolation drills that are in your book as far as weeding out specific areas and working on those. I mean, can you give me an example of what one of those drills would be and what it would work
on? Sure. There's something that's really common in USPSA is having different targets at different distances, and you kind of shoot them all from the same spot. So mm-hmm. that's a common question I get from somebody who doesn't shoot competitive. They're like, well, how far are the targets? And it's like, well, they're as far away as they put them. You know, it's whatever it is.
Right.
So there's a drill in there called distance change-up that you go from a five-yard shot on like a full-size person to a 15-yard shot on something the size of somebody's head,
mm-hmm.
and then back to a close-range target. And if you've shot a little bit at those type of targets, you know that you don't have to do a whole lot right to hit somebody 5 yards away from you.
Right.
So what that means for competition is that you can go really fast.
Right.
And then to hit a head size shot at 15 yards, you've got to do a lot right. Actually, you know, it's got to be pretty much perfect. So one thing that you see in the sport on different stages is that people have a hard time going from blazing close range speed where they just focus on the target. They see their sights peripherally and they just rail on close stuff.
Yeah.
And then they might have a hard time going out and making a longer, harder shot. So just taking that one element, turning that into a drill, and having somebody repeat that over and over again where they learn the discipline to every time they go out to that long shot, you know, they see a nice, sharp sight picture. You know, you see the sights lift up off that target right when they break the shot, and they're like, yep, I know I've got it. And then they can move on to the closer target again.
Yeah. So,
that would be one example.
Okay. And you mentioned there, too, and it was just a brief comment, but I'd like to talk about it. You said, well, yeah, I know I got it. Can you talk about calling your shots and what that is and why it's important to be able to do that?
Sure. Well, what I define as calling your shots is knowing with as much precision as you can where a shot goes at the instant you fire it.
Mm-hmm.
So typically, inside the sport, that'd be referred to as seeing your sights lift up off a target.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of other ways you can do it. You can have a pretty good idea where a shot's going just by how the gun feels.
Right.
People experience it really early on. If they learn what a flinch is, for example, they'll feel themselves flinching.
Right.
So they can call shots, but it's really binary. It's like either it was good or it wasn't.
Yeah.
And they'll know it wasn't good based on how it feels.
Right.
So as people shoot a lot more, you'd be amazed like how much you can see happening in front of you with like where the sights are positioned on the gun, or if you're shooting close range using just a fiber sight,
mm-hmm.
you see your sights as a blur on the target as you're shooting really quickly, maybe five shots a second or something. You can see your sights moving around on the targets and have a pretty good idea where all those shots are going.
Okay.
And that would be what we call shot call.
All right. And that kind of segues nicely into dry fire practice and why, do you want to talk about that real quick? And then I'd kind of like to hear what your class schedule looks like and what you're doing. That'll probably take us to the end of the show.
Cool. So dry fire practice, I mean, for most people who don't shoot competitively, that's going to be just pointing your gun at a target or at the wall and trying to press the trigger really slow and making sure that you can, break a shot without the sights moving around.
Mm-hmm.
For competitive shooting, you can do a lot more. Practice drawing, reloading, transitioning from target to target. So the way I like to do it is you kind of learn how to shoot with real bullets first. You kind of see what everything needs to look like. So if you like shooting at 25 yards, you get a hard front sight focus, you press the trigger really carefully, and you learn what effect that'll have on the target. I mean, usually for most people, like, all right, I can make 25-yard shots if I do that stuff.
Right.
And then you can go dry fire, and you can practice doing that stuff thousands of times, and it doesn't cost you any money.
Yeah.
You can learn, you can experiment with different ways to grip your pistol, shooting real bullets, and you can see the effect that has. You can feel it. And then you just pick the way that you like, and you go repeat that, thousands of times until you do it without having to think about it.
Yeah.
And then when you go back out to the range, you've made that change. It's totally subconscious at that point. And then, you know, you can do really well with that. Or maybe you'd be like, hey, this isn't a technique for me. I want to make a change.
Okay.
So for competitive shooting, pretty much anything you do on the range live fire, competitive shooters are going to practice it in dry fire. Or at least I'll tell them to. Whether or not they do it is something different.
Yeah, it seems like for whatever reason. I mean, and I do some personal instruction sometimes and some coaching sometimes. Certainly not to the level that you or really any of the other guests that I've had on the show do. But the thing that I always seem to have a tough time selling, and I'm not quite sure why, is how important dry fire practice can be for all aspects, whether it's learning to draw the pistol safely and effectively or learning how to conduct a slide lock reload. Any suggestions as far as how to motivate people to do that?
For me, yeah. I think most people decide to do it once they actually see some benefit.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter what it is. If you're on the range, like, working with somebody, and then you have them like, all right, unload your gun, and you have them do, like, 100 dry fire draws, and you really, critical of their technique, and really they get everything smooth and refined, and then they load their gun back up, and they see that they've cut their time down,
yeah.
For example. Like, that, I mean, for them, oftentimes a light bulb goes off, and they're like, yeah, this is what I want to do.
Okay.
If they're on the range and you're just like, hey, you should really dry fire because that's a good idea. And they're just kind of like, yeah, whatever.
Right, right. Okay, cool. So we got, a couple minutes left. I lied, actually. We have 1 minute left. What's your – you've got some classes coming up in New Mexico and Atlanta area. I mean, if people want to go and train with you, just go to bensteger.com pretty much. Sign up
yeah,
for stuff.
Yeah, I keep my class schedule up there. I mean, it's as up to date as I can really keep it. Stuff changes a lot. Stuff gets added a lot.
Right. All right.
But I'll be everywhere. Like, I'm going to Norway tomorrow. I'm doing classes there. I'll be in California some. I'll be in Georgia some. I'll be all over the place.
Okay. Well, I'll post a link up. Ben, I really appreciate coming on the show today, man. Thanks so much.
No problem.
All right. Have a good day.
Enjoyed it.
Cool.
You too.
All right, so next week, Father's Day, I'm going to have my dad in studio. I know. Matt the Minion was just like, wow.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, that'll be good.
That's going to be a treat for the listeners.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Remember, you can always listen to past episodes at BallisticRadio.com. Like our Facebook page, Facebook.com/BallisticRadio. I give free stuff away there. Anyway, everyone be safe, and remember to check us out next Sunday, 7 p.m.